Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick is here as we get ready to chat.
Oh, you know I love taking that victory lap.
To hear Chris gloat. Chris, I know you've got to be thrilled after the Bruins won last night, double overtime. So let's check the score with you. Welcome, Chris.
Well, thanks for having me, TD. And I say, let's keep those phones open, too. I would love to hear from some fellow Bees fans out there if they want to jump on board and join the conversation here. 1-800-423-8255.
Yeah, and you know what? If you watched call, but also if you want to know how to watch, I learned a ton. We're going to talk about that a little bit. I learned a ton about how to watch this and enjoy it, even if I can't follow the puck. So you got questions, you call, too. All right, brag away. What were you right about, Chris?
All right. I mean, we talked last week about how this was going to be a tight series, and I don't think you could have a tighter series than what we've had so far. We've had three games, three overtime games, and as you said, last night was a double overtime game. I will say it wasn't the boldest prediction that this would be a tight series, because these two teams now, going back 12 games in a row in the postseason when the Bruins and the Capitals play, 12 games in a row, it's been decided by one goal. That's an NHL record. So two really evenly matched teams, especially when it comes to playoff time. We said it was going to be a physical game, and there have been a ton of hits on both sides. And I also talked about the Bruins trying to avoid those stupid penalties, right? When you play a physical team, there can be a tendency if some guy hits you right at the end of a play and you want to retaliate, you want to hit back after the whistle. We saw Brad Marchand do that, get an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty last night, led right to a Capitals goal. So I think the Bruins just barely have the edge right now, but a 2-1 series lead in hockey is definitely not a sure thing. It's just definitely still up for grabs. So I think it's going to be really exciting to watch down the stretch. But
when
I got a question for you
game?
Now, TD. All
right, fire away.
Next game will be Friday night, but I want to ask you if you watched last night, because we have been talking about how to watch and how to appreciate what you're seeing.
So I did. I didn't watch the whole thing, and it was a really long game. Two overtimes is long, but I watched the first overtime, and I did what you said, which is I didn't worry about following the puck because I couldn't. And I was, in fact, I did what you said. I watched the action, the movement, and I did learn. I got a sense of what was going on. Now, when they're talking about who's in the blue zone and all, I can't do any of that, but I could follow, and it was really fun just to see who's doing what, how fast is the game, who's dominating. You really can get a feel for what's going on, and it was entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, it is about as electric as a sporting event can be. It's interesting you say who's dominating. I'm wondering, so you watched that first overtime period. Who would you say was dominating that part of the game?
Well, so, the Nets are at opposite sides of the ice for those who really don't watch hockey. And almost the whole time, the game was happening around the Capitals' net, which means that the Bruins had control of the puck for basically that whole first overtime.
Absolutely. So they had actually outshot the Caps 17-5 in that first overtime period. So that tells you are right on the money in terms of figuring out who is controlling the pace of play in that situation. And I got to say, so you watch the first overtime. That's great. The Bruins looked great in the first overtime. It was a really entertaining period. But you missed the game winner in the second overtime period, which was just an absolute shocking end to this game. After you said about 4 hours. So we had a long game. It comes down to this one slip up. And this is what makes this game so compelling. So you've got the Bruins basically sending the puck into the Caps end. The Caps had just tried to clear it. Bruins send it right back into their end. The Caps goalie goes behind the net to get it. And he stops the puck with his stick, and he looks around and he sees one of his defensemen coming up. So he decides to just skate away from the puck and leave it there for him. But there's a miscommunication. The defenseman kind of heads the other direction, and the Bruins forward, Craig Smith, sprints to the puck, gets there before either the goalie or the Caps defenseman can figure it out, and he slips it right in the net. I got to play this. This is what it sounded like.
Capitals clear the puck out, and then Miller fires right back down. Schultz in hesitation, allowing Smith to take the puck, and he scores! Craig Smith, game three, double overtime winner.
All right,
it
so
shows
you, have
you
to
how
let me...
quick it can happen. Yeah, go ahead.
So you have to let me excuse myself, because I did watch the first overtime. I wanted to see that. I would have loved it. but I was so tired last night, and the game was like 4 hours in. I actually fell asleep.
It's it takes a lot out of you watching, because you have to always kind of be ready for that moment, for the moment everything flips. And I just, it's so typical of playoff hockey that everything can come down to one little flip like that. You can play three periods of great hockey, a great first overtime, and then in 10 seconds, you just let it all go and you lose the game. And that is, I think, about as exciting as it gets.
So I want to put the number back out there. So listeners, one, did you watch? Two, are you going to watch? Three, if you're a basketball fan, we are going to talk Celtics in a minute. So if you want to talk about that play-in game from earlier this week, you can call about that too. Also, are your kids into this? And what do you think about your kids watching one of these local sports teams coming out of this pandemic find their way into a playoff and provide some really exciting inspiration? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join the conversation. Okay, so in the double overtime, Chris, we see what was literally just a painful mistake that led to a victory in a playoff game. How does that even happen at the pro level?
I mean, it's a great question, and nobody really knows the answer, right? But there's a few possible guesses. It could be after 4 hours of being so locked in, these guys are just tired and getting a little sloppy and kind of getting a little bit lazy on the ice. And I think it's also worth pointing out, the Capitals ran their third goalie of the series out. So we've had three games. They've had three different starting goalies. Ilya Samsonov is a rookie goaltender for the Caps. He hadn't played since May 1st, had been suspended for disciplinary reasons, was late to a team function. And they had been using Craig Anderson, who has been pretty solid in the series, but he's 39. So we've talked about the wear and tear of the grind of playoff hockey. He needed a day off, basically. So you've got this kid in with zero playoff experience. Maybe the moment was too big for him. I don't know. But he had a great regular season. He's been a good goalie for them. The question will be, now what do you do? Do you worry that this is a moment that's going to stick with this kid who's only 24, who doesn't have the playoff experience? Do you pull him and put in the veteran? Or do you ride the guy that got you here? It's really interesting, because so much of being a goalie is about mindset and confidence. And this kind of mistake can actually be a total career changer in some cases, but at least a series changer.
All right, 1-800-423-8255. We've got Fernando on the line from Framingham. Fernando, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say that I think it's awesome having you understand and learn how hockey works. But coming from someone that has parents that are Brazilian, growing up in a household that has only ever watched soccer, and me introducing them about hockey is just awesome, because last night I sat down with my dad, and my dad learning how hockey works, and he's on the edge of his seat, and it was so, like, so suspenseful, that ending Smith sneak in right behind the goalie. He was just on the edge of his seat. It's insane. Teaching the amazing sport of hockey. I think hockey is the most insane and probably, in my opinion, the most challenging and exciting sport. And seeing people get into it, especially from different communities like mine, Brazilian, right? It's the best. It's awesome.
That's so interesting to hear. I've been thinking a lot as we've been talking about this, Tiziana. There are some similarities between soccer and hockey. It's got that kind of back and forth, anything can happen in one moment to change the entire game, except it's a lot smaller space. They're on skates and there's walls all the way around the ice. So it's like, take that action, but put it in a much smaller space, flying back and forth. I just think there is a lot of the same appeal. Fernando, I'm wondering if you think that's a fair assessment.
Well, I think soccer and hockey are very similar, and I do agree. And I think that my dad.
Oh, shoot, we lost Fernando. And Fernando, you were so much fun. I'm glad you called in. Sorry that we lost you, but thank you for placing that call. And I want to pick up Bill in Chelmsford as well. Bill, go ahead.
Hey, Chris, I was wondering if you had any insights to what was expressed by the grade eight Alex Ovechkin to his goaltender after that epic failure. We could see him, his lips moving on the TV, but we don't know what he said. Do you?
So I've read, all I know is what I've seen people tweeting. I don't speak Russian, but I do know he was supposedly yelling in Russian, words I can't quite use, but basically saying, don't sleep. Basically saying, like, hey, be awake, we're in this game, get your head in the game. Yeah. A little more explicit Bill, than that, though.
Bill, thanks for that call. Okay, so Chris, I want to pick up on our hockey lessons. Fernando was talking about how great it is to be teaching people how to watch this game. I'm a big fan of popcorn and beer on Friday night, and I can add some Bruins to that mix. So tell me, what's the next tutorial? What am I watching for as a novice this coming Friday night?
All right, so we've talked about kind of the up and down nature and how it can be lightning fast back and forth and watching that movement. Now, I think the next level is when things get really intense is when you feel like you're on the cusp of something and then you just stay right there on the edge. And you kind of alluded to that. I want to talk about the third period last night. There were these long stretches where the Capitals had the puck in the Bruins end. And every time the Bruins would manage to get the puck, they'd either turn it over or one of the Caps would come in and steal it. And it just kept pressure. And all the Bruins are looking to do in that situation is basically to clear the puck and make a change. So I got to stop here and ask if you know what that means when I say they're going to make a change.
No. Nope.
No worries. So this is another thing that I think makes hockey really different than some of these other sports. When you substitute players in basketball or football or baseball, you do it when the play is not happening, right? The action stops, you switch your players.
Oh, you do it. You mean make a change in players.
Exactly. So you can't change guys when the puck is in your end right near your net because you'd basically be like, okay, have an open shot. Good luck to you. So what you've got to do is you've got to clear the puck to the other end of the ice so you can get your guys off the ice and get fresh legs on. A minute in a hockey game is a really long time. I'm wondering, Tiziana, what do you think the average shift for a hockey player? So they come on the ice. How long do you think they stay on the ice before they go back off?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, they're sprinting basically the whole time. So 5 minutes?
47 seconds is the average shift. And so that actually can be extended a little bit in the playoffs. You want to keep your best players on the ice, and it's kind of situationally based. But that just tells you how hard these guys are going and how quickly you're going to need to change those guys up to keep those legs fresh. And if you can't get those fresh legs on the ice, that's where you see the mistakes. That's where you see those slip-ups. And so when your Capitals are keeping the puck in your end for that long a period of time, it's stressful because you just know eventually that dam is going to break. And I feel like it also goes the other way, too, where you said the Bruins were dominating that first overtime period. They absolutely were. They outshot the Caps 17-5. But at the same time, you're only getting so many chances, right? And eventually the other guys are going to score on you. So each chance starts to take on a little bit of extra pressure and it can feel a little bit tighter. Even though you're controlling the game, you know you're only going to get so many looks before things are going to go the other way.
All right. So that is satisfying. I will now add to my watching the shift, the change, and kind of who's controlling the court, not the court, the ice. You can tell I was a tennis player. Who's controlling the ice? Okay, so I do want to talk about basketball for a minute because, again, we've been having this ongoing conversation about whether our Boston teams are going to carry our spirits, and it's been a discouraging run for the Celtics, and they had this special game this week where they had a chance to compete to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, so this is a new format because of the COVID shortened season. Usually the top eight teams just make the playoffs. This time they had to basically play to get that seventh seed. And they looked good playing against the Wizards, but I need to say that again, playing against the Wizards, who are not a great team. So I was impressed with the way they played on Tuesday night. They showed good effort. The offense was clicking. And they seemed engaged through the whole game, which is something they've kind of struggled with at times this year. But look, we've talked about the talent on this team. They've got all the talent in the world, one of the best young cores in basketball. The question is why they can't make it work. And I think a lot of fans were kind of crushed when Jaylen Brown went down right before the playoffs with a torn wrist ligament. But what you saw is that does kind of open up opportunities for guys like Jason Tatum and Kemba Walker, both looking very aggressive on Tuesday night, looking for their shots. Tatum had 50 points. And remember, this is just a couple of weeks after he hit 60 points, which tied a Celtics franchise record that Larry Bird held. I think it'll be interesting to see if they continue this momentum. But, man, they have a tough matchup against the Brooklyn Nets, which starts on Saturday.
All right, so you are now fancy prognosticator. So let's get you on the books for one more prediction.
All right. So I want to go back to the Bruins here because I really do think they can continue to carry this momentum into tomorrow night. I think the Capitals will probably get one more win in the series. They're not the kind of team that's going to lay down right away. I think it's important to point out through three games, the Capitals have led for more than 39 minutes. The Bruins have led for almost 8 minutes. So not really close, but I'm going Bruins in six. I think it's going to be the end result here. And you're all playing right, me off with my music. I love it.
That's right. It's Chris's departure music. All right, Chris Siddick, we will keep checking the score with you. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for having me, TD.